Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Talking Metal. Tonight, special guest co-host is Chris Sinzak from Decibel Geek. Chris, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks for coming on, man. It's long overdue. I know we've been talking about it for a while, and I know you're a crazy Kiss fan. You've given us a lot of great Kiss content on the Decibel Geek podcast, which I recommend all Talking Metal listeners subscribe to that on iTunes or where else?
Well, we're on all the different, you know, different destinations. We're on
Stitcher,
Spreaker. I think we're also on Podomatic and then Last FM. There's so many different avenues, you know. We're on pretty much all of them.
Are you guys on iHeart?
No, we haven't submitted to iHeart yet. No.
Yeah, I did, and I was rejected. So I'm now going to reapproach them with musicless versions of Talking Metal, which, I mean, as you know, when you're working a full-time job and you're a dad and you're doing 50 other things, it's like, this is the last thing I need to do is like a second version where I clean out all the music. But yeah. I guess iHeart's important. I don't know. Some people seem to think it is. I'm not totally convinced of that as of yet, but I know it's, you know, industry supported, and they're claiming they're going to be getting apps built into cars soon. So
yeah,
I guess it's important.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. We just haven't submitted yet. I think I'm just afraid of the rejection.
Yeah. Well, it will happen if there's even the slightest bit of music in your podcast. And they don't care if the PR guy said, go ahead and play the track. It's no music. But, okay, we're going to talk some Kiss today. We're going to talk some Vinnie Vincent. Chris is an expert on Kiss. He's given us, again, a lot of great Kiss content on the Decibel Geek podcast along with Aaron. And let's just quickly mention the Defenders of the Old Festival 3 on March 13th and 14th, 2015 in Brooklyn, New York at the Bell House. I will be there for probably both days, at least one day, because this lineup is incredible, guys. The Rods, the one and only, with Carl and David Rock Feinstein, who of course is Ronnie James Dio's cousin. They will be playing their first New York show in a long time. Aggression is playing, High Spirits out of Chicago, an excellent band which we've featured on the podcast many times, October 31, and most importantly, Exciter will be reuniting. They actually already have reunited, but they will be playing their first U.S. show at the Defenders of the Old Festival in Brooklyn on March 13th. So again, this is Dan Beeler, Alan Johnson, John Ricci, the original three guys, reuniting for the first time on U.S. soil at the Defenders of the Old Festival in Brooklyn, New York on March 13th and 14th. I will be there, and I hope to see you guys there. Guys, we have Chris here from the Decibel Geek podcast. Chris, do you guys, what's like your basic website if somebody just wants to check out the website?
It's just simply decibelgeek.com. That's all you got to do.
And how long has Decibel Geek been going on?
We started in April of 2011, so I guess we're approaching 4 years next year.
Excellent. And a lot of great episodes. Let's talk about the Gary Corbett interview you guys did. Did you just have him back?
Yeah,
I haven't heard that.
Yeah, we did. But. And like we had Gary come on, I guess, well, we recorded it around last Christmas, then it came out in the beginning of the year, and it was a two-part long-form interview, and most of it...
Explosive.
Yeah,
he
had a lot of very provocative things to say, and, you know, he laid it all out on the table for sure, and got a lot of response, and even got some response from a member of KISS himself.
Yeah, that's right. Paul Stanley kind of poo-pooed.
Yeah, but
you
he
guys.
Retweeted the link at the same time, so we appreciate it.
Yeah, he's a disaster on Twitter. I mean, Paul is out of control. I mean, I just spoke to Eddie Trunk in a recent interview, and I was fascinated. And I'm sure you probably heard about this. Paul claims that his phone was. Somebody picked it up at a party and tweeted out That Metal Show.
Oh, really?
You didn't know that? Yeah. So Paul, this is less than 2 weeks ago. Paul's Twitter account, the official Paul Stanley Twitter account, suddenly tweets out a tweet, and all it says is That Metal Show. And then 7 minutes later, Paul tweets out again saying, regarding that last tweet, that's what happens when you put your phone down at a party and somebody grabs it or something like that, implying that somebody like hijacked his phone at a party and was quickly able to open the Twitter feed and tweet that out. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's freaking weird. And Eddie and I spoke about it, and it doesn't, is it possible that that happened? Sure,
yeah.
But... It seems unlikely. And what is he doing? He's at a party. It was like, you know, 11 a.m. L.A. time. I don't know where they currently are.
Right.
So who knows? I guess it could have been a different time zone. But yeah, it was just weird and another kind of little strange nugget in the Paul Stanley, Eddie Trunk war, I guess, if you
I'm
will.
I'm inclined to believe it because, you know, Paul wouldn't have tweeted That Metal Show out the way he feels about those guys.
Unless, yeah. I don't know. It's strange. I mean...
You know, if he wanted to have a little bit more, be a little smoother about it, he could have just said, I forgot to put the word sucks on there on that tweet. You know?
Yeah, there you go.
That covered his own, covered his
And maybe he was going to do something like that. Maybe. Did you see where he was doing this... Q&A somewhere, and somebody actually asks in the audience. They open it up for questions, and somebody in the audience says, "Why don't you like going? Why wouldn't you go on That Metal Show?" And he really kind of again cuts it down.
Yeah, he called him Wayne's World or something. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you think Paul hates?
Oh, it's you know, and well, and going back to the interview we did with Gary, and it's not just Gary that told us this. It's not just Eddie that said it. It's kind of the long-running thing for people that have been on the inside of the KISS circle with Paul Stanley, and I'll always be a fan, and Paul's a great singer, a great rock star, and, you know, I'll never stop being a KISS fan, but, you know, his personality is such to where he's very thin-skinned, it seems, and he doesn't take criticism well, and he's very apt to dish it out, but not very apt to take it, and Eddie disagrees with the makeup issue, and I think Paul just was... He doesn't go for that. And also, you know, it's got to have something to also do with Eddie's longstanding friendship with Ace and Peter. I think that's what it is. I think Paul and Gene want people to pick sides. And if you're on their side, then great. And if not, we're not coming on your show. You know, I think that's what it boils down to. And it's Paul and Gene's decision. I guess they can or can't go on Eddie's show if they want to. I mean, it's all kind of silly and overblown, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on another note, you know this guy Bill Wang, right?
I love Bill Wang.
Yeah. Well, he's got this KISS page, KISS, something or another. Anyways, he's always like tagging me on these things that he's posting. And somebody posted a picture of Peter and Ace and, you know, the Bad Boys of rock. And why don't they ever... the question was, wouldn't you like to see them do a record together? Why won't Peter and Ace record a record together? And I responded to that Ace doesn't want to. I mean, And I think recently we found out what Ace really wants is to do a record with Gene and Paul. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah,
with that?
I mean, that's kind of the way, you know, if you sort of read between the lines, and us Kiss fans love to read between the lines with these guys, that, you know, answers that Ace has given in interviews in the past few months, I get the feeling he'd like to be back in the band. I don't think that's right. A big secret or anything, but, you know, if you go back a long way with Ace and Peter, I think it's pretty evident that Ace doesn't have any interest in Peter playing with him. He wants different types of drummers to play with him. I don't think it's really a shot at Peter. I just think Ace is more into, you know, a different style of drummer than Peter. Peter's very loose. Ace likes really tight technical drummers.
Yeah. I think Ace feels that he is constantly being grouped in and put with Peter in the interviews that Paul does. You know, Paul will refer to the books that Ace and Peter wrote almost like they're one book, you know, and talk about the negativity mm-hmm. and how they're full of lies and stuff. However, it's like Ace's book, I don't think he says hardly anything bad about Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very positive book, where Peter's is an incredibly negative book. It's a great read. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I do think Ace is probably tired of always being lumped in with Peter.
While Peter's is very filled with a lot of whining and stuff, he does spill a lot of beans, but you have to wonder how many of those are truthful or not.
Yeah, I think there's probably some exaggeration in there, but...
Yeah, there probably isn't all four of them to a point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I would say that. And really, not it goes beyond Kiss in a lot of these books, whether it's The Dirt or Stephen Pearcy's book or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, but to get back to Gary, I do want to just mention it.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we had him on for those two. Well, it was a one long interview, but it was two parts that we released it in, and it was fun. And we stayed in touch with Gary because he lives here in Nashville, and we've talked to him numerous times since. And I'll text back and forth with him. We kept going back and forth, going, "Hey, you know, we want you back," and he's like, "Well, you know, I've said all I need to really say about Kiss," and.
Right.
Like, no, we want to talk about something else. You're just fun to hang out with. And he was like, "Well, why don't we do a keyboard player discussion?" And we're like, "Well, you know, Aaron and I are not really big keyboard fans, you know, me more so than him." But we're like, "Yeah, let's have it back on." And, you know, we all came up with like a list as kind of the definitive list of hard rock and metal keyboardists, and had him back and just went through the list. And man, it was, we sat back and we had drinks and, it was another loose interview. Wow. This was a loose interview, but a lighthearted one, because there was a lot of just funny joking around and stuff. But Gary is an A-plus guest for us, and we're definitely going to have him back on again.
And that episode is currently posted, right?
Yeah. We put out a Rocktoberfest thing this past week, but that was the week before. But yeah, just going back a couple of weeks back. And I'm not sure when this will be released, but yeah, it's just a couple of weeks back from as of the time we're recording this. And, we put a show out every Monday. Aaron Camaro is my co-host. You know, we've been doing it for, you know, since April 2011. And, I can't imagine how you guys are doing. I don't know how you guys are doing up to like 500 shows. That's crazy. I mean, I don't know. Hopefully we'll still be doing it then. But, I do, before we get into deep Vinny and Kiss discussion, I want to thank you and kiss your ass a little bit, because you guys were a big part of why I got into doing podcasting in the first place.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I used to watch the TV show, and that was, you guys were one of the first podcasts I ever got into. I bought an iPod to have in my cubicle at work and started looking through the iTunes store. And then I see Talking Metal, and I'm like, is that the Talking Metal I used to watch on TV? Because I didn't I didn't know it was a podcast first. And I started listening to it from there. So yeah, you know, and then after listening for a few months and some other shows that I got into, comedy shows and stuff.
Right.
I was like, man, this would be fun to do, you know, and actually to get into the Vinny part of this thing, my podcast started because of Vinny Vincent. I was writing a book about Vinny Vincent, and that's what led to the podcast.
What happened to the book? Did you complete it?
No.
Still working on it, or are you left it?
Well, here's what happened. I did a few audio interviews with people while it was a book, and just to record them to transcribe later. And I had around 120 pages of material written out, and my computer completely crashed.
Oh.
And I lost just about everything.
Oh my God.
And So after I pulled my fist out of the wall, I still had some of the audio from the interviews that I did. I'm like, well, I did one with Ed Roman, who's, you know, passed away now, but he had a deal that went south with Vinny on a guitar back in Vegas, and Rick Fox, who's been on the show. And so they were like phone conversations, but I was like, I was talking to my wife one day. I was like, this really bums me out. I had all this good material for a book and now I lost it. And then, but I'm listening to these podcast things and maybe I can use some of the audio from this and just create a podcast. And
now you say Rick Fox, as in the guy who was in Steeler?
Yeah.
And what was his connection with Vinny?
Oh, that's in, I think he's on part one. I've got that whole interview on there. His Kiss history goes really far back because he dated Peter's sister back in the Loft days. But because he's from New York. But when he got out to L.A., he met Vinny during Vinny's auditions for Kiss. Like they were in a rehearsal studio or a hangar or something. And he
was in Steeler with Ron Keel at this point?
Probably, if not
at that time, he probably joined shortly after.
Yeah, I mean, according to him, he was with Wasp at the very beginning or something. And then that went south. And so it was probably between that and when Steeler got started up. But so we're talking like 82, I guess. And Vinny, he was walking in to talk to Paul and Gene, I think, or he's just in the same building with them. And Gene said, this guy that we're going to use now to replace Ace is in that other room, you know, playing around. And
right.
He goes into that room, and according to Rick, he opened the door and Vinny was playing through these stacks of Marshalls and he was wearing a pair of Ace's boots to get used to wearing the boots.
Wow.
That dumb. But now the juicy part of the Rick Fox Vinny Vincent story is that there's a song that I think the band he was in was called Sin at the time, and they did a song called On the Run, and Vinny liked that song and hung around those guys a lot. You know, all those guys used to hang out together. And next thing he knows, that song he claims was ripped off by Vinny and was used and turned into Let Freedom Rock on the Vinny Vincent Invasion All Systems Go album.
Wow, with Mark Slaughter. Wow.
Right. So that was the juicy part of it. And Rick was named in the bankruptcy case in 89 when Vinny filed bankruptcy. And he showed up at the hearings in L.A. And Vinny wouldn't make eye contact with him or anybody. He just, he basically turned tail and filed bankruptcy.
I mean, what a just incredible story this is. I mean, I'd love to read a book about Vinny Vincent. I'd love to see a documentary. I mean, Mitch and I have spoken about, hey, we should do a documentary on this guy. And I really think it would be an incredible thing to watch or to read. Yeah. However, as you know, it's easier said than done. And, you know, Vinny, it's just like, where is this guy? I think is probably still out in your area in Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't know.
There had been rumors maybe he returned to the Sandy Hook area of Connecticut, where his daughters run a makeup business. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the case. I think he's probably still in Tennessee.
Yeah, I can't say exactly where he is because I don't know exactly where. I used to because I live about 10 minutes from where the house was that, you know, just recently got auctioned off or was up for auction. And so I used to know where that was, but I do know that he is still fulfilling T-shirt orders that people have ordered.
So there's been additional T-shirts ordered,
yeah,
past the original seven or whatever they were.
Yeah. He's still sending them out because I still look at it's VV Forums, which is kind of the ultimate place for Vinny Vincent fans to read up on what's going on with him.
Yeah. And the T-shirts, guys, Vinny Vincent, basically, if you're not up on all the Vinny gossip, which I don't expect everybody to be up on it, but he is selling autographed T-shirts for like $75 or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's exactly how much. Well, and then initially, that's what he was fulfilling was the T-shirt. You paid the $75 and he was fulfilling those. And I, you know, even on my show, I gave him credit because the guy's got a little pretty bad history as far as not fulfilling things.
Right.
I said, well, I tip my hat to you. At least you're making good on this. And actually in recent times, in the last, I think, couple of months, I'd say, I've been seeing people that are posting their pictures of their orders and they say, I ordered a shirt. And then he'd send like one or two, sometimes more 8x10's also signed for no extra charge. So he's,
wow, I mean,
he's,
okay,
he's actually, you know, putting stuff out there. I don't know. It's as far as where, but I do know that those orders are being shipped from Tennessee. So I, okay, and I don't see Vinny having an assistant or a company or anything like that. That's,
what
I think
the,
it, it's
what
all
was
him.
The guy on, I guess it was Three Sides of the Coin. There was that guy who ran the
James.
Official, yeah, yeah, Facebook page. And then he mentioned that, was it Meredith or
Meredith?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Vinny's got a
assistant Meredith, right?
Yeah. He's got a history of, you know, according to me, I'm going to say it's all alleged, of like saying, you know, I'm so-and-so from Department A and I'll fulfill your order. But it's really, I think it's really just a one-man show there.
Right. So he was writing emails,
right,
to this guy who was running his official Facebook page, but he was writing them as Meredith.
As
this
Meredith.
Is this is what is alleged.
That's what is alleged. I'm not, right, saying it's a fact because I, yeah, don't know. I'm not watching the guy type up the emails or not, you know.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah,
and
that's what.
And that was on. There was a, they explained that and had this guy on who was running the Facebook page on Three Sides of the Coin.
Right.
What was his name?
His name's James.
James.
And yeah, he was initially. Well, we were thinking of having him on too, and I was going to. And he did Three Sides, and I, you know, and I was getting ready to, you know, start setting up a time, and it was right, I think it was a day or two after Three Sides' episode came out that Diane passed away.
Right.
And at that point, I just told him, it's like,
Diane, you know, was, for anybody Vinny, who's not in the loop, Diane was Vinny's, I believe, second wife, right?
Second wife, yeah, right. And I was just like, after that point, I kind of went hands off. I was just like, you know, this goes beyond the bounds of music, and you know our show is a music show. So it's kind of like, I don't need to, you know, there's no need. I don't need to stir up a hornet's nest of what's going on with Vinny at that point, because I was like, I'm going to let sleeping dogs lie. So pardon, right, the pun.
And of course, you've attempted to get interviews with him, right?
Yeah. Well, it's been a while since I've bothered. I've been told in no uncertain terms through, not through him himself, of course, but through people supposedly representing him, that he doesn't appreciate the shows that I've done on him and thinks they're slanderous and I should be sued, basically, is basically what I've been told. So,
wow.
But, you know, that's,
well,
fine.
Eddie Trunk is on a recent episode of Talking Metal, and I asked Eddie what happened with your attempts to get Vinnie Vincent, and basically, I think he probably was talking to that same lawyer guy that you're talking about. And, you know, he told Vinny that he is ready to talk to him, mm-hmm, and that he has an open invitation to appear on whatever, the radio show, that metal show, you name it. He, you know, even in print, Eddie said he'll do an interview with him in print, and it just kind of faded. And I forget exactly what Eddie says in the interview I just did with him, but I think he says, like, they said he's not ready, or he's, you know, thinking, yeah, about it. And if he decides that he is ready, he will definitely first and foremost contact Eddie Trunk to give that interview.
Well, and that should be the case. I mean, yeah, I think if anyone gets him, Eddie should get him, you know?
Yeah. And I got this phone number from a guy who had somehow dealt with Vinny, booked him at a Kiss convention a long time ago. And I called the phone number and I got an answering machine and said, "Hey, it's Mark from Talking Metal. I'd like to have you on the podcast." Of course, I never heard back. I don't know if that number was legit. It wasn't like, you know, "You've reached Vinny Vincent." It was a woman's voice who could have been Diane. And
possibly.
I'm now quite sure that the day I left the message on that phone is the day she may have passed away.
Oh, wow.
Not positive. And again, it may have not even been the right number, but I did leave a message there.
Did you know Diane had deeper ties to Kiss than just Vinny?
Yeah, I think you told me that she dated Ace at one point.
She did. She saw Ace back,
right,
during the late 80s, early 90s, I believe. And there's actually pictures in a book that came out.
Wow, that's interesting. She was just a hardcore Kiss fan or what?
Yeah, that was, she was a big Kiss fan. And I know someone who's talked to, who's been in they were in contact with her parents not long after everything went down. And her mom had mentioned that she was a huge Kiss fan, and that's how she met Ace, and then that's how she met Vinny, who she was a fan attending an expo.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And she worked the table out at NAMM a number of years ago.
Right.
And I know a few people who spoke with her out there, and somebody even said, "Where's Vinny?" And she said, "Oh, he's back in the hotel watching TV."
Mm-hmm. Is he
a public phobia, you think?
I think that has something to do with it. This is pure speculation on my part. I never talked to the man, so I couldn't tell you, you know, what's going on in his head. But just from speculation, there's got to be some sort of fear of being in the public eye, or I'm considered more of a defender of his than other people are, and other people that host shows and stuff. Because to me, I think he gets bashed way too much. But that's on a musical level. Because on a personal level, I do think that there's more than meets the eye as far as some of the business dealings and things that have gone down. Because I'll just say this, because you know, Gene and Paul like to quote this whole 15 lawsuit thing that,
right?
You know. And yeah, Vinny has sued them a number of times, but a lot of what you're seeing, though, were appeals of the same suit that got pushed to the next court. And if you really do your homework on this stuff, Vinny's main lawsuit for, I think it was songwriting royalty, went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Okay.
And you're not filing something that's frivolous if it makes it all the way to the Supreme Court. I mean, there is merit there if it gets to that high of a court. And I think there's a real argument for in his favor there. And Vinny has never been able to afford lawyers that are on the level of the lawyers that Gene and Paul can afford.
Oh, yeah, right.
Totally. So, you know, as difficult as he is to work with, I don't doubt that at all. I think he's kind of the whole tortured genius thing to a T. Nobody's ever said Eddie Van Halen was very much fun to work with either. Not that I'm putting him on the same level as Eddie Van Halen, but me personally, I love his guitar playing. But I do think he probably has done some unethical things, but at the same time, I don't think we should paint him with such a wide brush, because I think there is merit to some of his arguments.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I had got this email off of the YouTube page for his guitar, his signature model guitar.
Right.
And over the course of the past 5 years... or whatever that guitar has been for sale, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years. I've emailed that account probably 9-10 times, mm-hmm. and basically said, "Hey, it's Mark from Talking Metal. Ozzy's been on the show twice. We just had Tommy Thayer on, and he said a lot of good stuff about Vinnie Vincent. Would love to interview Vinnie." You know, just a bunch of freaking nonsense, you know, paragraph of trying to get him interested in coming on for an interview. Like, why would he come on Talking Metal when he has a platform like Eddie Trunk open for him? And of course, I never heard anything back. I kind of figured, like, who knows if this email account is even valid. Right. However, about 2 months ago, I sent an email to that account again.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Hey, it's Mark Striegel from Talking Metal. I still am very interested in interviewing Vinnie Vincent, and I'm willing to pay for the interview." I said, "I've never, ever paid for an interview before, from Nikki Sixx to Ozzy Osbourne to Yannick Gears. You know, I've never paid for an interview, but Vinnie is an exception."
Right.
I said, "Please let me know if you're interested." And I swear to God, 48 hours later, boom, I got an email back from a guy named Mark, who is a lawyer and represents Vinny. It's probably the same guy you have had some contact with, right?
Yeah. And a few other people that I know, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I'm assuming it's the same guy Eddie Trunk had contact with. And this is what the email said. "I received your email inquiry and he lists the email, order one, whatever the email is, about an interview with Vinnie Vincent. I represent Vinny on various matters. Vinny has not done any interviews or made public appearances in years." Yeah, no shit. "He has received offers and requests to tell his story about various matters regarding his time and Kiss and his own solo career. Vinny is looking for the right media outlet to share his story, answer questions. In order to evaluate your request, I would need some information, such as, what is the anticipated subject matter of the interview? Where would the interview air or be published? Who would be responsible for editing the final content? And what is your proposed compensation for such an interview? The big question, really the only question that matters, I think, is that yeah. And I will reveal now ever what I offered him. Of course, I consulted two people before I came back, one being my wife, who, of course, shares a bank account with me, and the other being John, my partner here on Talking Metal, who works with Ace. It's no secret. And John told me, said something like, don't offer him anything. And I said, no, I got to offer him something. He's like, well, offer him $500. I said, no, he's not going to do it for $500. My wife said, yeah, right, you can offer him $1,000. So I went back and offered him $1,500 for the interview. And again, this is my own money. Wow. We don't make money doing Talking Metal. I mean, sometimes we make $50 here or there with some, you know, Squarespace sponsorship or something. But in general, we're barely breaking even. So yeah, I offered him $1,500, right, and the guy came back. Let's see, I'm looking. Okay, so here's my response to him. And I won't say his name, but I said, thanks for your email. I host a show called Talking Metal. We are the number one hard rock and metal podcast on iTunes. Not anymore. That now belongs to Eddie Trunk. But we are also featured on Spreaker and Stitcher. We have been featured in such television stations as MTV2, VH1, and Fuse. If I were given the opportunity to talk to Vinnie Vincent, the interview would go out to listeners through our audio podcast feed. It would reach thousands of people. The interview would be conducted over the phone. I would need a week or so notice to set up the studio and prepare questions. Actually, I probably wouldn't have needed that much time, but I just wanted to get the questions right if it were going to happen. The subject, right, of the interview would be Vinny's career. We would want to talk to him about his time in Kiss, the Vinnie Vincent invasion, and hear about what he is currently up to musically. I promise you that we would avoid talking about his family or any lawsuits that he's been involved with Kiss or anything else. I'm a longtime fan and we will be very respectful. I would be responsible for editing the interview before it is posted. Talking Metal, my show, has interviewed the biggest stars in hard rock and heavy metal, including Nikki Sixx, Ozzy Osbourne, Iron Maiden, Deep Purple, System of a Down, Megadeth, Kiss, Slayer, Pantera, Warrant, Skid Row, and many more. We have never paid for an interview, but would make an exception for the opportunity to speak to Vinnie Vincent for 1 hour. Our podcast is free for the public to listen to, and we have very little support from advertisers. I work a day job to pay my bills. This isn't a source of income for me. I would be willing to pay $1,500 for an opportunity to interview Vinnie Vincent for 1 hour over the phone. Again, that's all the guy has to do is pick up the phone and call me and gets 15. Yeah, and it actually would have cost me more than that, Chris, because I probably would have had to have some sort of legal, you know, advice on my end, you know, to put things in an escrow account or something. I'm not just going to mail a check or drop off $1,500 cash, you know. So it would have cost probably more than that. I got an immediate response that said, Mark, thanks for your reply and information. Vinny is exploring some other options right now and is not interested in giving an interview. So I guess he's exploring other options, but he's not interested in giving an interview. I guess what he probably meant is with you, but yeah, he didn't say that. And then I responded immediately and said, please keep us in mind. I can definitely go up to 2,000 if that makes any difference.
Did he respond and say you need to add a zero to that?
Yeah. I mean, what does Vinny want to talk? I mean, and you know, you have these fan backed things and what is it? A Kickstarter.
I've thought about doing that.
I mean, if we were to you and I or Mitch or whoever start a a fund. I mean, I would honestly, even if it was for Eddie Trunk, even if it were the interview were to be on Eddie Trunk, I mean, we should talk to him about that. I mean, how much could we raise? I mean, could we raise $100,000 for the guy to talk? I mean, I think
I wouldn't want to raise that much for him to talk.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think he's looking for?
If I had, well, gosh, knowing the numbers that he comes up with for stuff, it's probably $5,000, maybe.
That's
more.
It.
Maybe more.
Right, maybe I
don't know.
I gotta crunch some numbers here. $5,000, I might be able to do.
Well, my suggestion would be for something like that, you would need to know from him. Say, what's your number?
Yeah. Well, he never responded, but maybe I should. Maybe I should respond right now. what's the number?
We could all put the word out. I'm friends with all the Kiss podcasts. We could just put the whole word out and say, put money into this, and maybe we get him to talk. But the stipulation for anyone that wants to fund money for that is they're going to want real answers to real questions, not just stuff about the songs. That's the sticking point.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, because there's a lot of people that, you know, Vinny feels like he's being hounded by people all the time because of interview requests and whatnot. Well, in my opinion, a lot of that would go away if he would do one interview and clear it all up. I mean,
well, it's like when Axl Rose hadn't appeared in public for years and years and years. The internet rumors and chatter and stuff, it gets more intense. It gets more crazy, and people start getting wacky because they want this person that they idolize so much to say something, anything, to appear in public. Mm-hmm. You know? And I think if the guy's got a public phobia, which who knows if he does or not, but the best way to ease the craziness that's going on, and I think the craziness that Axl had, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, more than that, on him was probably a lot bigger than anything Vinny is experiencing. But listen, when you have an article written in Rolling Stone magazine about, you know, where's Vinny?
It's a real story.
It's a real story, and it's a big deal, and people care, and it's not just the hardcore Vinnie Vincent fans. You know, I think there's a public interest out there.
Well, all of the things started with the book idea. I'm trying to remember what it was. Is I had a mild interest in Vinnie initially just because of his Kiss years, but I never, all through the 80s and early 90s, I didn't pay any attention to Invasion or any of that stuff. And I remember Love Kills from the Nightmare on Elm Street soundtrack. That was the extent of my Vinnie knowledge back then. And then the message board, the double V or the double V message board, that became a big deal because Vinnie was helping run that message board. And basically I became a member of that message board, and you know, we started hearing news about, my guitar might be coming soon, and then new music's being worked on, and then next thing you know, everyone's kicked off of that board, including the guy that was running it, the guy that owned it. Do you know that whole story?
No. I mean, I've heard little bits and pieces, but I don't think I know the whole story.
Okay.
Is it a long story? Or?
Well, I mean, in a nutshell, this guy opened up the Vinnie Vincent message board, and he was just a huge fan. And somehow somebody representing Vinnie, probably the same lawyer we're talking about, got in touch with him and said, Vinnie really likes what you're doing with this message board and he would like to be involved. And the guy initially was like, well, he's like, Vinnie would like to own the board and have you run it. And the guy said, well, I'm not just going to hand this over to anybody. How do I know it's really Vinnie Vincent? Nobody talks to him.
Right.
And the guy got Vinny to agree to call him on the phone, and he talked to Vinny for about 5 minutes.
Wow.
And so he's like the only person that's really talked to him in the last few years. And he had a good conversation with him and then started running the board. And then, according to him, Vinny started like registering himself as different people on the board and started making very inappropriate comments.
It's been alleged that Axl did that on numerous GNR boards too.
Well, there you go. And
Dexter. That was Axel's name on this.
Yeah, one. I remember that. Yeah. I remember all that. And then he was making inappropriate comments, and some of the stuff was pretty pretty harsh in nature.
What was he saying? What was he saying?
Some of the stuff was on the anti-Semitic level, involving Gene and Paul and stuff. And but it always was different people. And he was doing that, but at the same time, people would come on that board and ask about, well, when is Vinny going to tell us about what happened with the box set? I never got my box set. And Vinny would instruct this guy, you need to delete all these posts. So it kind of became like a dictatorship. And then Vinny started controlling the board, and he started deleting stuff off left and right. And the guy, you know, was like, at one point he had to like take a day and go do something for his job because he worked a real job. And next thing he knows, he's completely locked out of the forum. Everyone, including me, was kicked off the forum.
Right.
And he closed it.
You were banned from the Facebook page too, right?
Oh, yeah. That didn't take long at all.
Yeah. I learned that on Three Sides of the Coin.
Yeah. I'm quote unquote a real troublemaker, according to him. And but
who else? Was it Mitch? He was banned too?
Yeah. He doesn't like Mitch at all. Yeah.
Mitch LaFon, we're talking about.
Yeah. So, and he really doesn't like Mike either. But that's where Mike and I differ. I respect Mike and, you know, we're friends and all, but we differ on Vinny as a musician because.
Now, I think, you're talking about Mike from the Three Sides
podcast. Yeah, we differ on Vinny's musical output because, in my opinion, the guy's a brilliant songwriter and a brilliant guitar player.
Yeah, and let's end on a positive note. Yeah. Let's talk about that because he did some great stuff with Kiss. I mean, obviously, even Paul Stanley in his book, as big as Lick It Up was, Paul Stanley thinks that Creatures was actually a better record, and I might agree with him on that, but whether you think Lick It Up is better or Creatures is better, Vinny had a major hand in those records, you know, not just with his playing, but probably more importantly with his songwriting.
Oh, totally. The guy's a monster songwriter. And, you know, Adam Mitchell is who introduced him to Gene. And, you know, his, you know, the fact that I Love It Loud is as overplayed as it is now, was a big deal for them to get a song like that, especially after Unmasked and The Elder. You know, it was something kind of putting their foot back firmly on rock ground again. But the songwriting on that, and then he, you know, he has 8 co-writes on Lick It Up. So I mean, he owns,
which is the album, according to Paul Stanley, that really put him back on top. And I think that them taking their makeup off at that time helped them. And I just told this story to somebody. I don't know who the hell I was talking to. Cassius, or you know that guy Cassius?
Yeah, from
did an interview with him, and he, I was telling him, you know, I think as a kid I was this major Kiss fan from the time I was like 8 or 9 years old, and then it got to the point where I was maybe 12, and none of my friends liked Kiss anymore. They told me my Paul Stanley iron-on that I used to wear to school was stupid, and I started believing it. I was like, well, I guess these guys are right. Kiss is no good. And I, for a number of years, probably two, I mean, it seemed like an eternity, but that's because I was a little kid, you know, but for like 2 or 3 years, I basically stopped listening to Kiss. I didn't buy The Elder at the time. I didn't by Creatures. I remember seeing the album cover and being very curious about it in the record store. My mom even saying, hey, do you want that? You used to love that group.
Right.
Oh, no. I don't want that, Mom. I don't want that, because Kiss was not cool at that time. Okay. And at the same time, I was getting into Motley Crue. I was getting in, you know, Rat was hitting, and well, maybe not Rat quite yet, but I was getting into a lot of Scorpions, you know, AC/DC, of course, all these different bands that were in the same. Well, yeah, at that time I wasn't really getting into thrash quite yet, but I was getting into bands that were kind of in the same genre as Kiss. But I wasn't willing to give Creatures a chance because they still had the makeup on. They still, you know, I was like, oh, that's 70s. We're in the 80s now. Those guys are stuck in the past, you know, and none of my friends like them, and none of the older cool kids at the junior high like them. And suddenly Lick It Up came out, and it was like, hey, this is Kiss, but They're a lot like Motley Crue, you know. They're a lot like Rat. They're a lot like a lot of these other bands that are currently coming out. And I really embraced that record, and that's the record that after a 2 or 3 year absence brought me back into the Kiss fold, and I fell in love with the band again, and I immediately went and bought Creatures.
Yeah.
After I had picked up Lick It Up, I went back. I started getting into The Elder. You know, I had already had loved Unmasked and Dynasty and all the albums before that, you know, so those suddenly came back into rotation.
Oh.
And Lick It Up is the album that brought me back to my favorite band ever, which had been from, again, like age 8 to 11 or 12, had been Kiss. And
yeah,
it's been such a major, major part of my life. So, yeah.
Well, the 1-2 punch of Creatures and Lick It Up together, I mean, that's, you're not going to find two records in their catalog back to back that are that powerful, in my opinion.
And Vinny was on those records. I mean, to bring it back to Vinny, and not just my personal story, but Vinny was on those records and he made those records great. And if there's any question as to, well, you know, I've heard people say, well, it was probably Paul, you know, and it could have been somebody else. It didn't have to be if it wasn't Vinny, it would have been somebody else. But then you go to that first Invasion record and it's insanely good. It's insanely good. And Robert is a great Fleischman. Yeah. Great songwriter, wrote with Journey, wrote Wheel in the Sky, you know, the big Journey hit, along, I think, with Neil Sean. But anyways, this guy's no slouch either, but again, it's Vinny, and that record, that first Invasion record, is incredible. The songwriting is just insane.
Oh, it is, and we actually had Fleischman on the show for one of our Vinny Vincent specials.
Yeah, I think I did hear that one.
That's a very revealing interview too. He was in the mood to talk that day, from what I've heard, I don't know if it's accurate, but I think I remember Vinny saying in interviews around the time he left that he was actually working on demos for Animalize, and some of those songs that are on that at First Invasion album were intended to be used by Kiss.
Like Back Animal, on the Street.
Animal.
Wow. Okay.
You know, Kiss puts out Animalize.
Yeah. That's interesting.
You know, I don't know now, if it's a fact though.
I mean, it makes sense. You know, I mean, what about the song Back on the Streets? Now, that was odd because in one of those official Kiss books, Vinny claims that there is a version of that song with Paul Stanley singing lead.
Yeah.
And I think in the Kiss book, he even comments that he, you know, this is one of those Kiss books from like 10, 15 years ago, one of the official ones, that he wishes Paul, you know, Kiss would release that because it's a great version. So we know that exists somewhere. It, of course, ended up on the first Invasion record. And then I used to, as a kid, or as a teenager, had this bootleg cassette that I'd bought at a record swap in a Holiday Inn, it was held in the Holiday Inn. It was a record swap. And I bought this bootleg cassette of Ace playing at the Ritz, probably like 84, 85. And he played that song. Ace was playing a Vinnie Vincent song, which is weird.
It is weird. And like, yeah, cause Kiss demoed it for the Creatures album. And then Ace ended up demoing it and playing it live. There is a demo there's an Ace demo, but it's Richie Scarlett singing the song.
Right.
And then John Norum ended up doing it and releasing it as a single.
Why didn't Kiss put that on their box set?
Because Vinnie Vincent's name's on it, I'm sure. I don't know. I mean, because money would have to be paid out, I would imagine.
And they just hate him so much. I mean, there's even that story. I think it was Mitch who uncovered this, that, what's the song? Unholy. Which it came to light that maybe that beginning feedback or guitar noise may have actually been Vinny. That didn't they edit that off of the box set version of Unholy?
Ooh, I don't know. I have to go back.
Yeah, don't quote me on that, but I think so.
That's an interesting conspiracy if it's true. I don't know. If you've heard interviews with them about Vinny, you know there's no love lost there. I mean,
although they did thank him at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame speech.
Gene did. Yeah.
Gene did. Okay.
Yeah, Paul's not about to. It's one of those things where like the first Invasion album was great. All Systems Go is good in its own right, but I can tell that they kind of bent to record company pressure to be more commercial on that album. And then the stuff that he did after that, that, you know, the Guitars from Hell and stuff,
right,
is way too over the top in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I love Shredder guitar records. I used to own Jason Becker stuff and Paul Gilbert stuff and all that stuff, but it was like atonal jazz type stuff. But, Vinny at his best was when he worked with Paul and Gene. And I think it, and people always say, did Vinny save Kiss? No, I don't think Vinny saved Kiss, but he was a contributing factor and getting them back to respectability after some really rough albums. But
right,
it was a combination of Vinny help coming in and helping, the new change in the direction of the sound, and the makeup. The makeup was a big thing, because just like you said, you were one of those kids that saw them in the makeup and were like, eh, they're old hat.
I remember sixth grade. I went into sixth grade loving Kiss, wearing my Paul Stanley iron-on, and this is the early 80s. Mm-hmm. But the tide was changing. You know, Zeppelin was still cool. You know, the Eagles were still cool. There were a number of 70s era bands that, even though they didn't really exist in the 80s, they still remained in a, you know, light that people viewed as hip and cool. Kiss wasn't one of those bands. You know,
right.
And it may have been because they were more of a teeny bopper band. I mean, even the 18-year-olds, most of them didn't like Kiss. You know, this was a band that was truly a youth-driven band, you know, 15 and under, you know.
Well, yeah, and there's not going to be, I mean, how many people that were around for Parasite were still going to be as jazzed about hearing Shandy a few years later?
Yeah. See, yeah, that's true. That's true. And I mean, I was too young to have experienced that song, Parasite, when it first came out. But Unmasked, for me personally, was an enormously big record in my life. And I to this day, I think it's a great record. You know, I love it.
I think there's germs of good songs there, but the direction
it's
overall and the production, like, yeah,
it's a pop record.
Not
yeah.
That and The Elder are two lower points for me.
Yeah. Well,
nothing lower than Psycho Circus, though. I think it's
really
the worst album in the entire catalog.
Yeah, it's you know, Crazy Nights. I have some issues with.
See, I love that album.
Yeah,
but that see, it's all
there's a couple.
All,
there's a couple
the
great songs on Crazy Nights, though. I saw them on that tour. That was a great concert, but
that was
Psycho
the
Circus. Yeah, it's one of the worst Kiss records. Psycho Circus is probably one. I mean, the song Psycho Circus I love.
I do like
however,
that one.
And Into the Void I love. However, like, the rest of that record I could really take it or leave it.
Yeah, I like Journey of a Thousand Years just cuz it's different, but stuff like the ballad that Peter does.
What's the second song on that record? That one's
on Psycho Circus.
Yeah,
is it Within?
Yeah, I kind of like that Within. I kind of like that one.
I like it on Carnival of Souls. Because it fits that album better than it did Psycho Circus, but
yeah,
I did the Raise Your Glasses and We Are One.
I'm with you on that. Definitely,
I still love Kiss though. Even a bad Kiss record is a good record.
Very true. Very true. I've always said the only Kiss record I truly don't really enjoy listening to is the Peter Criss 78 solo record.
Yeah, I had about a month that I tried to convince myself I liked it, and then finally I just gave up.
Right on. Anyways, we should probably wrap it. We're about at an hour here. And Chris, it's been great talking Kiss with you. I could seriously go on another hour. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's so fun to talk about. And I'm sorry if we got a little too gossipy, guys, with the Vinnie Vincent story. There's even other stories. I mean, there was the startup, but the sex change story was out there for a while.
I can't deny any of that.
Yeah, I think that was fiction. I heard from some guy who was at one of those conventions in the early or mid 90s with him that he said that as he was meeting with the convention organizers, and John Ostrowski actually knows the guy who heard Vinny say that.
Really?
It sounded to me like he was just kind of like joking around, but people didn't get the joke, you know. And that suddenly the rumors started spreading. And he did things that didn't help, you know, kill the rumor. Like he showed up. What was that weird thing where he showed up to sign something and he had those like real girly shoes on and he was holding that picture in front of him? You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know. I remember there was a convention where he showed up in the makeup, but I don't know if that's the same thing you're talking about.
No. It was, I feel like it was Australia or something. I'll have to check my facts. But
see, that's another thing where it's like, do an interview, clear it all up.
Yeah, really.
We all just want to – hell, screw an interview. Just put something out musically. I mean, let's hear you play again, man. I mean, come on.
Do you think he still plays? Do you think he's still playing guitar? He picks it up. You think he's still writing songs?
I got to think somebody is obsessive with music as he's been through the years that –
And so good with it, so talented with it. Yeah.
I've heard interviews of people say, like, you know, he was unnerving to hang out with because he never would set the guitar down. Like, he was constantly plucking away. So I got to think he still plays to some extent. I mean, it's a tragedy if he's not.
Right.
Because it's just, I think plenty of people still want to hear from the guy.
You know, Gene has said in one of his books that he's never met somebody more self-destructive. And of course, we've heard all the stories about Peter and Ace and their partying and the craziness. But he doesn't go into detail. Like when he says that he never met somebody who was more self-destructive than Vinnie Vincent. What could he mean? Is it drug problems? Is it, whoa.
I don't think drugs ever were a thing for him.
Really?
I don't think so. I've done a lot of digging. I was writing a book on him, so I don't, you know, and I didn't come across anything like that. But
alcoholism? I don't know. I mean,
I don't think it's anything substance-wise. I think there's issues with, you know, personality issues. That's all I can figure, but you know, it's also coming. This is coming from Gene's standpoint. Gene's saying, you know, Vinny would never sign a contract. Well, did we ever get a look at that contract? Did we ever see what terms they wanted him to sign to?
Right.
I mean, because for all we know, they were trying to bend him over and screw him. I don't know. You know,
right.
us as Kiss fans, we're like, come on, you know, you're going to play in Kiss. Why don't you sign the contract? But I don't get the impression he was ever a Kiss fan. He was coming from a musician standpoint and was probably like, you know, you're going to compensate me fairly for my services.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not totally waving the Vinnie Vincent flag here either. There's plenty of evidence of him doing very questionable things. So don't think that I'm 100% defending him. But at the same time, there's two sides to every story on something.
Absolutely. Like absolutely. All right, Chris, well, we'll leave it at that. And maybe we'll pick it up on another episode somewhere down the road and keep talking Kiss, keep talking Vinnie Vincent. And let's, you know, both just hope that this guy can come out and at least tell his story. I think Eddie Trunk would be a great platform.
For him
to do that, you know, and I don't know how much he wants for an interview, but I think I've recently found out that there is a possibility that if you have enough money, you might be able to buy the interview.
It's an interesting idea. Yeah. I would gladly chip in because I'd love to hear from the guy.
Yeah, if everyone who wants to hear from him gave $20, I mean, we'd probably have, what, I don't know, 10, 20, 000, you know, who knows how many, you know, I think there are a lot of people that want to, Rolling Stone wants to hear from him.
That gave credence to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as much as I don't like Rolling Stone, but still they are Rolling Stone.
Yeah, and I do think the new crop of writers there are a little more open to Kiss, and we can't blame them for the sins of the past, really.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, you still have that Jan Wenner guy in charge of the whole thing. So I guess it's still kind of the same thing. But the new group and crew and of writers, I think, respect bands like Kiss and Led Zeppelin a lot more than, and Black Sabbath for that matter, a lot more than the guys that were there in the 70s and 80s.
Well, that or also you have to figure that you kind of need to please more people now that magazines don't sell like they used to.
And it wasn't just metal. I mean, they made mistakes on other stuff, too. I mean, they gave U2 Unforgettable Fire, you know, which I think is a great record. I know a lot of metalheads might not like it, but
I like it.
Most rock critics think that was a great record. The public thought it was a great record. Rolling Stone magazine gave it a terrible review.
Well, they gave Zeppelin's album.
I think Kurt Loder actually wrote the review.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Kurt Loder's.
Yeah, he's all right. I've met him a number of times. He's all right, but saw Hendrix play live, so you got to give him some credit there.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, can I do a quick plug for the show?
Absolutely, go for it.
Okay, so yeah, Aaron Camaro is my co-host. We've been doing this for going on 4 years. Put a new show out every Monday, Decibel Geek Podcast. Go to decibelgeek.com. We're big into Facebook, so go to the Decibel Geek on fan page on Facebook and interact with us. And gotta say, this has been really fun finally getting to come on the show with you, because I've been a listener for a long time.
Cool. Well, you're doing a great job with your show. You and Aaron both are, and I definitely want the Talking Metal listeners to check it out. We've plugged you guys a number of times, and there's a reason for that, and that's because you do a great show. So, guys, definitely check out Chris and Aaron on the Decibel Geek show on most platforms, as you mentioned earlier in the show. iTunes is usually the way most people get it, so go subscribe and leave a review on iTunes for Chris and Aaron and the Decibel Geek podcast.
Thank you so much.
You bet. All right, guys, we're going to end with a little Kiss. Let's end with something here. Chris, what do you think? Something off of Creatures or something off of Lick It Up?
Let's do something off of Lick It Up. Let's play... I love this song. This is a great song. Let's play Not for the Innocent.